When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
It's Thought Leader Thursday on the Opening Bell. Rod Murray is here. He's the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. Talk about some of the trends from last year moving into this year in the banking industry, both business to business and consumer. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
It's good to see you back at it for the year. I know a lot of different institutions and news organizations and people that write about your world have all their New Year's resolutions and lists of the big things for 2019. I thought we'd spend a little time talking about big ideas for 2019. And this sort of stems from an article from American Banker. But this notion that there are going to be some big things that happened this year in 2019, what would you count among some of those, do you think?
Well, continued innovation is the constant theme on how do you attract today's consumer, tomorrow's consumer, how do you keep up with the digital side of banking, digital media, what is it that you're going to do for real-time payments? It's money movement is constantly changing, attacking and getting to your client and making sure that they are getting the latest and greatest on how to run their businesses or their personal lives is a constant challenge that the banks have to keep up with.
And also, I mean, just from your world, it's about making some money, too. I mean, you're in business to be a money-making entity. How does that shake out? Is it better interest rates? Is it overdraft fees? What would be on the list there?
Sure. I mean, the changes in the Fed rate over the last, last 12 months plus has changed margins a little bit. But specifically to the American Banker articles you're referring to, one of the things they talk about is overdraft fees, and banks can't rely on that forever. You know, it's a $15 billion industry. And one, there's competition for accounts that are overdraft fee-less. Mm-hmm. But two, eventually you're going to have real-time payments. I mean, that's a big thing we talk about on the business side of things, but at some point it's going to be P2P, person-to-person on that. That will eliminate, you know, overdrafts.
Yeah. And we'll get into that because I think that's an important big idea for this year. But this the overdraft thing, this American Banker article talked about how much some of the banks make from this. I was kind of blown away that J.P. Morgan in 2017 collected nearly $1.8 billion in revenue from overdraft fees.
Right.
So it's a moneymaker.
It is a moneymaker, and it's something that the banks, big and small, aren't going to quickly run away from, and it's going to have to be some kind of a tail on that because it is such a just fee generator. However, it's something you have to look to the future on. How do you augment that? How do you provide services that maybe look at the behaviors of your clients that keep them in your bank, keep them using the banking services versus non-banks, fintechs, et cetera? That's what I think the banks, big or small, are going to have to compete with, is how do you replace that fee income with other business?
Yeah. The last thing you want to do is to have a customer leave your bank for one of those other places that are fee-less, right?
Correct. A customer is so hard to gain. You know, the acquisition cost of any client, whether it's banking or any business, is incredibly steep. So losing a client, losing a customer is something that the replacement cost is significantly more than, even what you lost, because you've lost that business, plus then you have to replace them by marketing or attaining a new client.
Walk us through the real-time payments thing again. How does that work in your world? How has it changed from year to year?
Sure. So, and the rest of the world, especially Europe, is probably ahead of us here in the United States. Not probably, they are on that. That, you know, when you're, I'll use an analogy, you're at the cash register, right, that says, boy, I think I'm getting paid. I have this many checks that maybe, or ACHs or automatic withdrawals coming, playing the float, playing when things actually hit your account. Real-time payment says this is exactly how much money you have. And then across the aisle, whoever you're paying, this is exactly what you're going to get. And you know you're going to get it because it's all on a real-time basis. Mm-hmm. The issue with it is getting the technology behind it so that all of the different agencies and the different, not just regulatory agencies, but the different money movers are all talking the same language. That's still the issue that's at play.
It doesn't necessarily take the banks out of that process, though, right? And because we talked about Venmo and some of these other places that you can go and sign up for those services, this is something the banks do too. So you're still in there, right?
Right. The banks are still a part of it. You know, it's whether they build it themselves or they're partnering with a third party, the banks are still going to be a part of the process.
Can you make money with those? With that?
So I think that you. I don't know if you make money, Steve, as much as you keep money from walking out the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about something, and I know this is one of the other big things. We've been talking a lot about how people have consumer debt. A lot of people spend on their credit cards for the holidays as well. One of the big ideas of this year is building a safety net for consumer debt when that bubble pops, if you even want to call it a bubble. What are we talking about there, and how does the bank get involved in something like that?
Yeah, so you stress test on what happens under different scenarios. So you see what your if a crash happens like 2008, what does that do to me? Am I set up for it? What is the financial impact? You also manage by limits. So there are, I might want X amount in a certain product or in a certain liability that I'm going to say, this is the max I'm going to do. It's the type of product that is being sold. So when they talk about the safety net, it's just knowing what your absolute downside could be and what do you do to protect yourself to not be blindsided if it ever should hit.
And from the consumer standpoint, does that mean offering consumers more debt consolidation, better interest rates on credit cards or better credit card interest rates?
Right. That's what a lot of banks do is when they see that and whether they're writing programs or algorithms to look at that on what might be higher risk profiles, often they do refer people to a third-party debt consolidator, which can work because it consolidates everything and puts it on a payment process. The issue is whether or not the either the credit cards or whatever the debt instrument was that got them there is closed off, because if you just take on one piece of debt but the other is still there, you've just aggregated the problem.
I know we've talked about this too before, and this sort of goes along with that real-time banking is sort of giving customers more control over their financial data. From my standpoint, I think I have control over mine. I can go on and see just about anything from my banking account. What more control, what more data would we be able to see?
I think that what they're talking about in that article and in general is talking about the data that's shared. You know, what you want shared, what you don't want shared, you know, as kind of an offshoot to that, it's opting in or opting out. It's how does your app or your electronic, whether it's, again, bank or anything that you're dealing with, how do they talk to you and how they communicate with you on what data you have being shared out? And there might be advantages to it or disadvantages. I know when I sign up for something, the first thing I get is, do I want to have opt in or opt out for push notifications? I always opt out. Well, if you're talking about a bank or banking or something else that maybe you've opted out for that would have pushed you saying, hey, my account's down to $20,
right.
That might be something you want to look at, then now you've kind of just hurt yourself. So how do you earn the right to talk to your client then and communicate appropriately?
Yeah, and part of that too, I think, is having something less than the 50-page consumer rights notice or the, you know how when you sign up for one of those apps, how you get the user rights and responsibilities. It's a lot and it's complicated, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I will admit, if you're taking the time to read that, more power, and I encourage, and we should all do that, but I don't always do it. And it's something that is voluminous and people mostly just go, and if they want to move on, they quickly check the box and say, I agree.
One of the interesting things as we talk about all of this technology is sort of keeping that people aspect alive. And I know we've had this conversation before, and this article talks about thinking outside the app, as it were, keeping those people relations alive and well. That's sort of becoming more and more difficult, isn't it?
It is. It's, you know, as a, you know, somebody in my 50s here, it's something that I still like to talk to people. You know, tomorrow, today's generation, tomorrow's generation, it's not something that is feasible going forward, that API or AI is something that is taking the place. So you still have to have that somewhere. I mean, it's still, to me, the crux of customer service, but it's something that's becoming an art that is few and far between.
I've heard it described as earning the right to talk to people. And I think you mentioned that actually earlier, you referred to that. Earning that right to talk to people means doing some work.
Right, and it means on both sides.
Yeah.
That, you know, that the customer or the client should be able to have a live voice to try to find when they want, or if they want to use technology, they have to have that too. The tough thing is for the company that's providing is the balance, you know, efficiency, and do you pay somebody to sit there who may or may not be answering a phone? It's all about the efficiency of each side of the equation.
Right. You mentioned the push notification part of this, but another interesting thing is, you know, let's say customer A has just decided they don't want to do full digital banking right now. And in some cases, that's the last time they hear about that option. The idea of going back to that customer 6 months down the road and maybe reintroducing those ideas or those services, is that something banks need to do more of?
Absolutely. Banks and all companies, but banks for sure, because you do it, you have this onboarding process, and it's a ton of information, as you had mentioned, and then you may forget about, you know, step number 10 along the way when you use a certain provision or a certain application. So I think that having smart apps or apps that check your behavior, that guide you along the way, that is the way to really communicate, is saying, hey, I just saw that you did this. This is how, do you want to do this next step? As opposed to doing it all in the onboarding process where you have to remember something that you might not use for, you know, 9 months.
Does it scare you when you read stories about how Alexa is being integrated into banking? Hey, Alexa, give me my bank statement, or hey, Alexa, pay this bill today. Is that something that all banks need to start thinking about, or do you think that's going to be unique to Amazon?
They have to think about it. Now, does it scare me? It's all about the firewalls that you put up. So, and we talk about that. I know a lot on the show. Is that's the scary part, is what firewalls do you have on the protection? But it's something that tomorrow's consumer want. They want that real time. They want it all centralized. They want everything to be talking to each other so that it can be as simple as you just said, where you call out, and I want this balance, but I want it to talk to a lot of different sources.
Mm-hmm. It's sometimes referred to as a unified omni-channel experience. That's the fancy way of saying having all those different things in place. But when you have an omni-channel experience, there are many more channels where security could be at risk too, right?
Right. I mean, that's the key is, what's the security? The consumer, right, doesn't care. And so it's up to the financial side of things to make sure that it's a safe piece and everything's talking. The other fancy word besides the omnichannel is, you know, API, application programming interface. You know, and that's the fancy way for saying we want all of these things to communicate and talk to each other. It's something that we have to look at in the financial institution side, because if it's something that the client wants and can be built, then eventually it'll happen.
You know, you come into the banking industry and you have a set level of skills, and here we are talking about all this stuff. How do you do it every day? Because you really have to sort of learning all this new stuff as you go, don't you?
Yeah, you have to be flexible. You have to say that every day I have to learn a little bit more, and you can never learn too much. It's really just being adjusting to your client base, mm-hmm. on what's out there. What you can't be stuck in the, you know, in the 80s or 90s on how things go. Otherwise, progress is going to move right behind you, right beside you.
Do you have high hopes for the coming year, 2019? I know there are questions about where the economy might go and other things, but do you think this is going to be a good year?
Well, since it's the first or second week of January, I always have high hopes.
Right.
And it's an interesting dynamic right now on what is going to happen with the economy. You know, if you listen to the economists, are we on the brink? Are we not on the brink? If you look at the numbers and you look at jobs, 1 month it's great, 1 month it's behind. Right. We all wish we had that crystal ball, but I still have high hopes. I think that it will be a interesting year for, you know, businesses to continue to innovate and find the way to grow, especially the small businesses. I think that's where the, you know, if I have any kind of an angst is, how do the small businesses continue to compete? Just like when we talk about banks, how do the small banks continue to compete? And they can do it and we can do it, but, you know, that will be the challenge, is just competing with everything we just talked about, the technology and the spend.
Rod, I always enjoy our conversations. What if somebody listening out there wants to get in touch with you and talk to you personally?
Sure thing. So my phone number anytime is 312-544-4515, or an email is rodney.murray@associatedbank.com.
All right, Rodney, we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGN Radio on the Opening Bell page, and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Head over to associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership to learn more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.